Make something that fixes a problem that you have in the way you want it to be fixed. And then if it applies to other problems you have, then you can change it and make it better fit to general problems that you have. But don't try and make a tool that solves a problem that you don't have yet. Okay, hello, hello everyone. I'm Gears.
And I'm Mox Valix, and welcome to the Datapack Podcast, episode 5. And it's actually a part 2 of episode 4. And joining us today is Wolfian, who also helped us out on our Harlequins pack.
Hello.
So, Wolfian might not be joining us for the entirety of the episode. We'll have to see how much time he has. And also, unfortunately, his audio quality is not going to be as good. But we won't let that get us down. And yeah, Wolfian, do you want to give us a bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Miles. So I'm a artist and story writer who is a bit of a hobby Dawn hacker. I've worked with Mox Valix primarily and Gears occasionally for one or two data packs, including Code of Copper and currently for Harlequin data packs for the Imagination Game Jam. I mainly do the art side, so that includes structures, textures, and lore, as well as game balancing for playthroughs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you do a really good job, I would say.
Yeah, I definitely. I think, especially like, I mean, Code of Copper would be completely different without the structures that that you made for us, because like it would just be, you know, a golem and a book, you know, but it, you made it like actually have lore and stuff, and also Harlequins very much so, because without you we may not have got it finished in time. So yeah, we didn't actually mention it last time, but Wolfian built two structures for the Harlequins data pack, as well as writing 90% of the dialogue, which sort of plays throughout the experience as you go through the island. We basically at some point we realized we realized that, you know, neither of us were particularly good at building, and we were also fairly limited for time, and so yeah, we just sort of asked you, Wolfian, hey, can you whip up a couple structures for us? And thankfully you said yes. So do you want to talk us through? I mean, obviously, yeah, it was quite short notice, but you did a good job. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, no problem. Yeah. Firstly, thank you for inviting me, both here and to the data pack for the Imagination Game Jam. And I'm always happy to lend a hand. So there were, like you mentioned, there were two structures. The first was the city near the end. When Mox Valix originally reached out, he sent me the image and said, hey, Wolf, we've got this image, we've got this game jam. Could you help us out? And I'm like, okay. And Salvador Dali's got a very interesting style, so I had no clue where you guys were going with the game jam, and said, we need a city. And I'm looking at this picture going, okay, do you want to give me a run through? And as you said in the previous podcast, your take on this data pack this time was very experimental with the various islands that players progress through with the two entities that accompany the player. And after some discussion, we sort of settled on a medieval-style city, because it's very Minecraft-y or widely used in the Minecraft communities. And I started medieval. I went through stone buildings, wooden logs, and then as I progressed, I started adding in different wooden textures, different blocks. And in the end, you had this mix between a medieval city and something that other players would build in their own worlds. So halfway between medieval and fantasy, which was very reminiscent of progress of players. And I greatly enjoyed experimenting with build styles there, because I often build in one style for a world, don't mix them, because I like to have this one feel. That was a great chance for me to explore as well. And then later, Mox Valix approached me and said, hey, could you build this photo, this reference, which is a first for me, because usually I'll go to world and go, what's the biome, how do I feel, or a fantasy or something like that, or something based off of the data pack itself with a concept. And so all of a sudden I've been given a reference, and that was a lot of fun, because I usually don't work with gradients. I work realism in terms of Minecraft. So if there's stone in the surroundings, I'll use stone or that type of wood. I won't use honey blocks in the roof or gradient colors or melons or so on. So all of a sudden I was using different blocks as a block palette instead of as building materials. So that was a lot of fun and gave me a chance to explore and experiment. Also seeing how I could adapt the Minecraft block palette to Dali's work, because not all the colors are in the exact same form. And also some of the details get lost when transferring to the scale, because you only have a 48 by 48 block space within a structure block. So that was a fantastic challenge I found. And as you guys said, the Imagination Jam was something different, being given an image instead of a concept or a prompt, written prompt. That was fun. And then in the end, you guys approached me and said, hey, we're writing a script for the two entities at the end of the game. And you came in, you started some stuff and said, hey, can you have a look at this? And so I went through and we worked through it. And in the end, we had the two entities accompanying the player throughout this. And I tried to keep this similar feel to the original two entities, but I noticed that as we wrote them, they were interacting a little bit more with the player and their speech. We had the corrupted text, and all of a sudden, they're not just speaking between themselves, going, ah, the player perceives us. It's speaking, going, it's a journey. And do you think, and what about, and I wonder about. And then we had the ending, which we tried to keep very close to the original end credits with wake up. This is a dream. So in terms of everything, while the data pack itself was very experimental in terms of progression, I felt that you guys both kept a consistent theme, and even some of the things you had, like this decay of the city in the end or the rising blocks of the end islands, were very well put together. So applause to both of you. And like I said, thank you for inviting me. It was a great experience, and I hope people that play it appreciate it as much as it should be.
Yeah. And, well, obviously, once again, thank you for, you know, all of your contributions. And I think especially that you really nailed it with the poem. Like, it very much gives me the... Like just reading it very much... You know what it's referring to. You know, like, it's very clearly the end poem, but modified for, like, it's the style of the end poem, but applied to this new setting that we've given it. And you've done a very good job of, like, emulating that style and really incorporating these abstract scenes we've given you, and you have managed to turn that into a story. So that's pretty cool.
The recreation of the image with Minecraft blocks was amazing. It looks just like the original image. But also one thing that's somewhat unfortunate is that people aren't really going to be able to fully appreciate your city that you built, because as you sort of walk through it, it decays before your eyes. So by the time you get to the end to look at those ones, they were all disintegrated into nothing. I actually got I got to get a proper good look at all of the buildings in the city, because when you built it, you only built the front of it, so it was a facade essentially, which is fine obviously if you're just walking down the street, but because they were decaying, we wanted to add we wanted to add sort of the backs as well, just so that, you know, if the player were to look into it, then, you know, there would actually be that. So I basically went through the whole city and gave some rudimentary, third and, you know, other walls for the buildings.
That's greatly appreciated. Because the funny thing was, Mox hadn't told me it would decay, so I was building this city, and due to the limited time, I tried to get it to you guys as quickly as possible. So I was building it thinking, if the player runs through, what can be seen, what can't be seen? And then Mox came to me about a day later and said, hey, look what we done. it decays, and it's an amazing visual. I just hadn't realized it would decay. So you'll notice right at the very end, the blacksmith, the lava doesn't decay before the blocks around it. So if you walk slow enough, the lava will spill out. I thought it was hilarious. Not sure why, but just something, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that one in my testing as well. We probably should have picked a different seed so that hopefully the lava would be taken out before the blocks around it. But we were a little hard pressed for time, and I don't think
you guys.
Okay.
Yeah, so
before we continue, should we move on to how the pack actually went? Because they announced the winners, but we haven't actually gotten to see that yet. We've held off until this recording to actually see the results. So we can continue talking about this after. I just think, you know, may as well knock that out now.
Oh, yep. I'm extremely curious. You are. You've been doing well. Hold yourself back.
Yeah, it was hard not to check. Then.
Okay, here we go. So, in third place, is Harlequins. So we got third.
We still made it in the top three.
Yeah. In second was one called Snapshot Bubbles, and then first was one called Desert Scourge. Let's take a look at the actual, because the Planet Minecraft page contains the scores of the for each.
Yeah.
Thing. So,
I'm gonna guess polishness was
pretty close actually. So the scores are out of 20. We got 16.3, second place got 17, and first place got 17.25. So
we were pretty close.
Like within one point total. So within 5% of each other. So yeah. So we got 3.3 out of 5 for polishness.
Okay.
4 for interpretation creativity, and then 4.3 and 4.3 for aesthetics and visual appeal, and then 4.6 for innovation and technicality. So yeah, that's always the one we get best on, isn't it? I'm pretty.
And obviously, when Wolfian joins, we get the visual appeal one as well.
Yeah, I remember for Code of Copper, I'm pretty sure we got 10 out of 10 for technicality, which was pretty cool. It was basically just, it was just a small margin of difference between the three of them.
Yeah.
I haven't actually looked at any of the other packs. So if we'd got a little bit more for polishness, maybe. If we'd got 4 out of 5 of polishness, then we would have been, we would have tied.
Yeah, but
second,
I still think for how experimental this pack was for, well, all of us, I think, because none of us have done a pack with this sort of style before. I think that's amazing, you know, just to make it top three anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there were only 5 entries in the thing, but I think, yeah, I think the polish definitely could have.
Yeah, that was definitely our main.
That was the weakness.
Yeah, and we will be going over. We're planning to talk more about the retrospective of it later on in this episode. So, but yeah, okay, we got third, which is still pretty good. We at least placed on the leaderboard.
Yep.
So
I guess we could talk about why it sort of lacked a bit of polish and what we could have done better and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Yeah, basically, the final 2 days of the jam, right? It was an eight-day jam in total. The final 2 days were like the most rushed and pretty stressful. But basically, I like to think of what I call the development curve, which is basically when we first came up with the idea for this. For this data pack, neither of us, I think, was completely sure about how this was going to work and how we were going to get it done. And over the first couple days, right, I was like, are we even going to finish this and get it to a point we're happy with in time for the jam, right? And then towards the end of the first few days, so like, maybe 4 or 5 days in, we were starting to like make some real progress, and we're showing each other the stuff which we've been working on. I was like, oh yeah, we're pretty much done, right? We got all the islands done, we got all the stuff planned out. Yeah, we're so gonna get this done on time. And then it came to like the final couple days, and it was like, yeah, well, we've got all the main bits, but now we need all the connecting. All the connecting stuff.
The glue.
You know what they say, the last 20% takes 80% of the time, right?
Yeah.
It just Code and of there was Copper so like... much. Yeah, it's the same thing with Code of Copper. The last couple of days was just like such a rush to get as much stuff done as possible, just like hours on end of working on stuff. It's pretty stressful. Like after we submitted the pack, I just like, I don't know, I was just like so tired, and it was like, yeah, such a weird state to be in. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah. And so basically towards the very end, right, we had like less than an hour left, and we were still trying to tie the last little bits together. And so, yeah, we basically, we just had to, you know, like towards the end, we were just testing it, and we found a couple bugs which we needed to fix. And we didn't, it was so crunch for time that we didn't even have time to test if our bug fixes had worked. We just had to trust that the code which we wrote to fix the problem had actually fixed it.
Yeah.
Which was, not ideal, to say the least. And so I think a lot of bugs ended up sort of making it through to the final thing because we just didn't quite have enough time to test it.
Yeah.
So I had an idea for one way we could potentially have planned out this data pack a bit better.
Yeah.
And I think if we'd given ourselves one less day of time.
Right.
Then, like, if we'd done all of the you know, like, all of the work on the day before the end, right? And so, basically, we got to the point which we got to one day earlier, which I think we probably could have done, because, you know, it's always, like, the case that in the beginning, you never really work as hard as, like, you know, you sort of maybe you underestimate how much work you're going to do, or you're just not feeling the motivation to do it, or whatever it is, you just don't get that much done. And so if we'd got a bit more done in the previous days, and then just essentially done everything a day earlier, then we could have spent the last day, like, just polishing it.
Yeah.
So we would just, you know, we'd play through it and be like, okay, what can we change? And just have, like, enough time to just really look at it and make it as polished and like as high quality as possible.
Yeah.
So I think it would be good, like, as a note for next time, you know, try and finish it before the deadline, because we were still making changes like 2 minutes before the deadline, right? Which is really not what you want to be doing.
Which I think, like, we were doing with Code of Copper as well. But it was more polished.
It was slightly less
yeah.
Than this, I think, with Code of Copper.
Yeah.
But it was still a big crunch at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's a similar thing with a lot of things, right? You know, like exams, for example, right? You got, you know, you're studying for exams, and then right before the end, you know, you're just cramming as much as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Into learn as much as you can and get your mind in the proper space to do it. It's not just us, but it's definitely something to think about for next time.
Yeah. I think as well, something I noticed, and the major difference for me between this jam and previous data pack jams I've done is actually the time that it started and ended. Because for me in the past, it's ended around 6 a.m. my time and started around 6 a.m. my time. Whereas this time it's 1:30 a.m. And what that meant for me is that I felt like I ended up missing pretty much a day because it started and ended at the middle of my night.
Yeah.
So, like, with Code of Copper, on the last night, I could keep working throughout the entire night. I could get the whole night of work done, which obviously isn't very healthy, but it worked. That's something. Yeah, it's something. Unfortunately, I just couldn't do with this jam. I did it the night before, but even then, it wasn't like. I know. Because it's not the final night, I guess there's less urgency, so I get there's less done, I feel like.
Yeah.
I think, and,
yeah, there's always less motivation. The further away from the deadline you are, the less motivation you have, because it's just like, yeah, okay, that's still got a whole week, right? We're fine. And then, you know, it's like, okay, we've got 45 minutes to get this and this done. We just have to do it, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes I wish that I could have that much motivation and work like that hard for other data packs as well, or other projects. Because, you know, it's like, you know, there's a certain thing, right, where at the beginning of the jam, I was like, you know what, at this point, I don't, I'm not that invested in this data pack yet, right? I'm still not a massive fan of the idea. I still don't exactly, I still don't exactly know how we're going to pull it off really necessarily. Et cetera, right? So like, you know, I have a feeling we might not finish this, but you know, I don't really care because I'm not invested in this data pack yet, right?
Yeah.
But then it got to the end, right? And then it was like, yeah, I've worked on this data pack for a week now, and you know, it's like we have this amount of time left, and we got to do this, get this done. Like, I don't care what it takes. We are going to get the things done.
Yeah.
In time, no matter how, you know, how difficult that is or whatever. You know, there's just a certain thing where you just like you just push through any blocks you have. You just say, yeah, I'm not dealing with that. Not letting that. I'm not letting that stop me, right? You just sort of push through it. And there's something that a time limit like that really, it really does that to you. It really gives you the motivation to do that.
Yeah. Actually, I'm gonna draw Wolfian back in real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we haven't let him talk for a little bit.
sorry about
but,
that.
But, I didn't actually start making data packs doing data pack jams. I started making data packs building maps with Wolfian for our friends. And we actually have a very similar set of constraints like a jam. Because we don't have a set start date, but we have a very set end date, which is the friend's birthday. We make the map for the friend's birthday. And we've done a variety of maps in the past. Actually, yeah, Wolfian, would you like to go over some of your favourite ones to work on?
It's a tough one. Like you said, we've had so many over the years. I think one of my favourites has to be Turtle Golf. Inspired by Turtle Hockey, we had Turtle Golf, which was a mini golf set over, it would have been, like, if we take one block as 1 meter, it would be something about, like, 4 by 2 kilometers in terms of playing field. So it's a massive mini golf course with turtle putts, turtle golf balls. So that one is one of my favorite ones because it was three-dimensional. You could follow the course, but also hit turtles over the course and see how lucky you got. We've had everything from mid-air trident wars to turtle hockey, obviously. We've had story-driven games. We've had hide and seek. What else? Recently we had a archery-style mini golf course in itself presented a unique challenge because everyone does use the bow in Minecraft or has at some point used a bow in Minecraft mode. And all of a sudden you've got blocks that teleport, give you buffs, debuffs, move you, and so you're moving where your arrow, like, fantastic one. And Mox, in his sheer genius, also helped recreate first-person shooters. So we created maps of some first-person shooters that we enjoy and played those. So we've had all sorts from really simple games with, or maps with, barely any code, others where almost the technical data pack, if it wasn't for the fact that there were maps. So fantastic into that, and every year they become more complex, so tying it back to the data pack. While we don't have a start date as such, we usually say we have about a month. Most of the work happens the last 2 weeks, then a lot happens in the last week, and then usually the last 20% of time, or the last 80% of the work, as happens in the last 20%, but in this case, it happens right up to the moment where we meet to celebrate this person's birthday. So it's the last day.
Yeah. I remember we had one map that we made called Outer Time. And as well as playing that map, we also had a round of bowling at this bowling alley that we were doing before we did the map. And Outer Time was possibly one of the most complicated ones I think we ever did, or at least in terms of the ones that I was involved with, most complicated one that I was involved with, because obviously I'm not involved with the one for my birthday. I remember just literally at the bowling alley on the table while everyone was ordering their milkshakes and hot dogs before we started bowling, I was still there coding up the last little bit of the pack.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just like
this last thing done before.
Oh, and it's like I feel like at this point that was 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know how long that was, but it's been a constant thing where it's like, every time I'm like, oh, I should have just learned by now to, you know, get it done beforehand, you know? And then every time in the last 10 seconds, I'm changing about 14 things and I've been more productive than I've ever been in my life on this last 5 minutes.
There's just something about a hard time limit that just makes you...
The other thing I want to add, because while you and Mox and Alex do pair coding for your data packs and your projects, it's interesting in the sense that while I do make data packs, I can't code, or I don't code. I can use generators, I can understand the basics, but I can't make a data pack entirely on my own. So while you guys said you brought me in to complement the building and fill in the points where you feel aren't your strengths yet, I'm sure you'll get there. Interesting when Moxvalis and I work, or when I worked with both of you for Code of Copper, because you worked primarily in the code and I worked on structures. So a lot of time I will produce something, or for these projects, these birthday projects, I will make the map or the structures or the textures or items, however, and then send them to multiple valleys who will implement them. So for a lot of the time, it's it'll be first 80% will be me making structures before Multivalix can put the 80% of the work in the last 20% of the time, which is always very interesting.
Yeah.
70% of what you see in a data pack is stuff that I make. It's the 95% of what makes data pack actually function, the part that you guys make. That's always interesting from my perspective.
Yeah, well, I think this data pack especially was kind of different to, well, especially data packs that the two of us have worked on in the past, because we've been doing a lot of like technical data packs and stuff. In that the ratio of like code to structures in this case is very different, right? It's, you know, like it's like we did a lot of structures in this, whereas, you know, previously we, Wolfian did a lot of the structures for Code of Copper, but, and we just did a lot of code. Like, Code of Copper has a lot of code in it, right? Whereas this, the code is a lot of the code is just sort of sticking stuff together and placing stuff in the world and just adding that little extra bit.
It's mainly glue code.
Yeah.
Which I will say is possibly my least favorite part of data packing is the glue. Is like,
yeah.
It's, and I think that's why I found it such a challenge to find motivation to work on this pack. Especially because, I mean, yeah, if we're going to start getting into the retrospective on this pack, I know that definitely a lot of the pack was held behind by how long it took me to make my islands. Because we had agreed on a 2-day time limit to make the islands, and I was still working on mine until literally the last, like, half an hour or something. I think I finished the final island, converting all the blocks and everything, in maybe the last half an hour. And for me, I really do struggle to do any building in Minecraft, which Wolfian will know, because they've been trying to get me to build a base on our shared private server. And yeah,
4 years.
If I remember, I'll put up a screenshot of my most recent base, but unfortunately they didn't approve of it as much as I did. I mean, a lot of effort went into it. Maybe not into the base itself, but the blocks that the base consists on.
Those that showed me pictures of it before.
Those that can't see it on the screen, I made a base out of diamond blocks. Like, I think around 2 stacks of diamond blocks went into the base, but unfortunately that did not pass the homeowners association.
You've got the 2 netherite blocks.
Oh yes, 2 netherite blocks as well. Those took a while. But yeah.
No, I can attest to the 2 stacks, especially since I removed it all and replaced it with light blue wool.
Yeah, that was definitely a prank. It's not fun to log back into your server and all your diamonds have been replaced with wool.
Yeah, I mean, you are supposed to keep them in, like, a little bit of a more secure place than the walls of your house.
Well, you know, I expect that my neighbours aren't going to be pilfering from the walls of my house now. But, you know, you can never tell with these rough neighbourhoods. Yeah.
Your neighbour built a castle and needed to build their treasury.
Yeah, but on that note, building is something that I've been... as a data packer, I think... A lot of it's the case in a it's the thing in a lot of cases, right, where you have someone who is particularly talented at one thing but quite lacking in skills in the other. So, you know, either they'll be good at coding and they won't be very good at building and pixel art, or they'll be great at drawing, but, you know, don't like to code very much or, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's sort of a classic issue, I guess. Maybe not an issue, but, you know, it's a thing that happens a lot in
a reoccurring
people in
theme.
General.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just how it goes. But anyway, so yeah, I'm more of a programmer type person. So I've always had a bit of a creative block when it comes to, I mean, even drawing. I never drew that much. And yeah, building and pixel art and stuff was never really my forte, as it were. But I have been trying to get better at
building.
At building, and yes, specifically building. And yeah, so I was, I found it interesting, like, taking, because yeah, essentially what I did for the modern island is I went into a Minecraft world, and I found a nice cherry biome, and I cut it out 48 by 48, which is the maximum size you can have for a structure.
Yep.
In Minecraft.
Wolfian is very familiar with those dimensions.
Yeah. And so then I pasted it in my testing world, which is just a void world basically with nothing in it except the things I was building. And obviously the thing is about having just a 48 by 48 slice of the world is that it basically just cuts off, right? It essentially it had a cave system which went down and then just cut off into the void. And obviously that doesn't look very good. And so I had to, you know, do something about that. So I basically rebuilt the bottom of it to be like a deep plate cave, and essentially have the whole world like sort of scaled down vertically to show, you know, because we were trying to show all the different changes that had been made over the different versions, and obviously the addition of deep plate is a pretty big one. So yeah, I wanted to show that, and yeah, I had fun like sort of creating fake terrain features, and yeah, there were some like holes and stuff which I had to patch up, and I really enjoyed that, because it's something I don't do that often in Minecraft. I'd like to get better at it, and I also enjoyed having a look at the city structure that you'd built, Wolfian, because even though the backs of the buildings were pretty rushed and they weren't particularly high quality at all, because they weren't really there to look good, because people weren't going to look at them really. It's just on the off chance that somebody noticed that it was just a facade, you know, just a sort of guard.
Indeed.
But I enjoyed looking at the different block palettes and techniques that you'd use to create interesting effects in the buildings.
Appreciated. I know I've already said this before, but I was quite impressed as well with your adaptation, Final Island, because when I arrived there, when you were showing me through, I got there and I looked around, you were showing me the progression that play would have to go through, progress, and it did take me quite some time until I realized, hang on, this isn't the natural Minecraft generation. It's far too close together, because you had a mountain and it was almost straight deep, because it had been merged that well, small Minecraft that you had in there and was the caves. So it was done so well that it took more than a few moments to actually realize, hang on, Gears has built this. And you explained your process of you chunk out and then 48 by 48 area, and then changing the cave and raising the deep slate so that it was part of the actual world and not a hole in the void. But the eye for detail that you had for completing the natural generation to fit the scale in itself shows not only the budding capabilities of a builder, but also your eye for detail and your knowledge of Minecraft generation in the way as well. So I was quite impressed when you showed me, as well as the floating blocks when the island finally disintegrates when the player completes their task.
That was a lot of fun to work on as well.
Yeah, that effect is super cool. I'm a little bit sad. I feel like some of the judges didn't, like, reading the comments, some of the judges didn't work out the puzzles and brute force their way through, which mean I feel like they missed a couple of these awesome, like, especially possibly, like, missing that scene. It's such a magical scene.
It's a pretty key.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty key part of. And I think some of them sort of missed, even though we wrote a bit about the about why we made certain decisions about and how we took inspiration from the image and everything. I think some of them sort of expressed that they didn't really get how it had how it was inspired, and they didn't see the they didn't see the connection between the thing that we made and the and the image, right? Which is a shame. But yeah, what can you do, I guess? I think one thing we definitely could have done better is, well, which again just came down to not having enough time to do it, is just giving some hints to the player to to help them with their puzzles, because they weren't immediately obvious, for sure. They were sort of obscure, interesting things, right? But yeah, well, that was sort of the idea with the dialogue. We were going to, like, have the dialogue giving hints to the player, you know, the two speaking entities, saying stuff about how the player can progress forward and everything. But, we didn't really have enough time to write that into the dialogue.
Well, I feel like there's hints of it in the dialogue. But the timings, I feel, as well, we didn't get the timings entirely right.
The timing for the dialogue is, not good. We just basically read through one of the, the longest line in the dialogue, basically, and said, okay, how long does it take me to read that? That long. And so, there, we're going to make everything that long, which makes the dialogue feel sort of quite long and drawn out, right?
It was a bit sluggish, just tedious, how slow they take to talk, which is a bit sad, because I feel like then, you know, players might just start ignoring the dialogue and miss a whole bunch of the story that's being told, which is a bit sad.
I think definitely something we should change, when, because we are definitely going to go back and release an update to this to this data pack, to like improving upon what was lacking and what we didn't have time to do in the 1 week we had, basically. So I think one thing we can definitely do is adapt the duration, so we can have, like, we'll have something which basically changes the duration of the speech based on the length of the dialogue, right? So it actually is, like, realistic to how it would be in the, you know, how they were actually speaking. And I think a lot of the timings were a bit off, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, the polishedness wasn't quite there due to the rush of the project. And that's something that would have to be polished. But the text itself does draw inspiration from each of the islands for every piece, and does contain clues while still maintaining the tone of the two.
Again,
I think the polishedness. Speaking of, I do have to leave now, so thank you both, Mox of Alex and Gears, for inviting me on today.
You're welcome.
I hope that in the future you'll also invite me to other data packs or other that you're working on, if you have any, or even just reach out a hand, or if you need any help, and I'll be there. And see you both online or in a jam.
Thanks for joining us, and I guess we'll see you whenever we need something built again. Okay. Well, I guess we'll say goodbye to you now. But we are going to continue talking, because there are more topics that we would like to cover this episode. See you soon then.
Enjoy. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the episode. So,
bye.
Okay. So, what else do we have to talk about? Right. So I guess we can now finally talk about the thing which we've been sort of teasing and hinting at for multiple episodes now, which is Zoglin, right?
Yeah.
We haven't actually mentioned that name yet on the podcast, but if anybody is in our Discord server or for whatever reason checks our GitHub organization regularly, you'll have probably seen it. So it's a project we're working on, which is a datapack preprocessor. And what that is essentially another programming language which you write, which then essentially compiles Minecraft datapacks. So you write it in generally a more high-level language, which allows you to express certain concepts without having to use, without having to think about all the weird workarounds and limitations of empty function. And then we write a program which figures out how to do those for you. So you can think of it like any normal programming language is compiled to assembly. When you're writing Rust code, for example, you don't need to think about what exact instructions the CPU is going to have to run to access a certain field on a struct that you're using, right? You just write the syntax and the compiler does that for you. And so, yeah, Zoglin is essentially that, but for empty function. It's not a unique concept. It's sort of a running joke in the datapack community that there are lots of datapack preprocessors, because it's like if you know about JavaScript, the JavaScript ecosystem of web development, there's this joke about how there's so many different web frameworks and people are still making new. It's the same thing with these, because everyone has their own slightly different idea of exactly how a Minecraft datapack preprocessor should look like. So everyone makes their own. And we've done it too.
Yeah. I feel like, even though obviously it's quite done, I feel like Zoglin still has a couple unique features that it can bring to the table of datapack preprocessors. And maybe less features and more design philosophies, I feel like. Zoglin is very much designed around the way that we have developed, like the design process that we've developed for making our data packs. It has a very much a focus on the concept of modules. So we call a module a folder in a data pack a module. And so we've pretty much built the language to treat folders and like nesting MC function as like a first class feature of the language almost.
Yeah, because as any datapack programmer will know, right? The hardest part, well, one of the hardest part about MC function is that every single function needs to be in its own file. And so when you're hopping between, like when you're looking at logic for a certain thing, you have to open a separate file for each, you're like following a chain of function. You've got to, open up a separate file for each function that you're following, and it gets a bit cumbersome. So yeah, one of the main features which we're allowing, and most datapack preprocessors have this, is just allowing you to, just write multiple functions in one file.
Yeah.
Essentially. But that's not really a unique feature. But I think what, as you said before, what is a unique feature is actually focusing on having that in a sort of structure as it would be in an actual datapack. Because I feel like a lot of datapack preprocessors just have the concept of functions, as they would be in any programming language, right? Whereas I think what Zoglin does is it really treats functions in the same way they would actually be treated in MC function, right? You've got the actual modules and the namespaces, and it feels very transparent. I feel like a lot of datapack preprocessors maybe abstract things away a little too much.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of having just, like, say you're printing something to the chat, a lot of Datapack preprocessors have a dedicated print function, which essentially compiles to, say, your tel_raw, or, yeah, probably tel_raw, which feels a bit unnecessary, I think. Like, why do that when you can just use vanilla commands, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, one of the main things that Zoglin does is that it,
treats commands as a first-class citizen.
Yeah, commands are first-class citizens, so a function is essentially going to look pretty similar to how one in MC function would be, but then it has some extra nice things you can add on to that.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about this too much, because I think Zoglin is definitely big enough that once we've worked on it more, we can write our own, not write our own, but make a dedicated podcast episode for it, right? I think it's definitely a big enough topic for that.
Yeah.
So I think let's just talk about Zoglin for now, talk about it in the context of this data pack. So, yeah. So essentially, the whole Harlequins data pack is written in Zoglin. So we use Zoglin, and the code which we've written so far, our implementation so far, which is still very incomplete. There's still many, many features which we would like to...
Yeah, which we've spec'd out, but we haven't implemented
right.
yet.
But, yeah, so we have basically the bare bones, right? We have modules and namespaces and functions and commands, and we have basically the ability to write your entire data pack in one file.
Yeah.
Which we didn't do. We still split it up into multiple files, but we split it up into, you know, one file essentially for each island in this case, right? We had one or two files for the classic island, and then one for the beta, and one for the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that is a nicer way. Again, it's like how we would have organized it in folders in a data pack, but we just had one folder essentially flattened out into one file, which makes it much easier to work with, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on.
So I want to talk a little bit about what I feel. I'm going to start with what I feel Zoglin really helped for. And I think something that it really helped me with personally, I don't know what your experience of it was, Gears, but I found it was really nice being able to manage assets and resources through Zoglin.
Yeah.
Being able to have all of the different assets just listed in one file, or being kept in a folder and explicitly added through a file, I feel was a really nice way of keeping track, like mentally keeping track of the different assets in the data pack.
Yeah, so just to explain that, as well as allowing you to write functions in a Zoglin file, you can also write resources or assets, which are things like advancements, loot tables, and even textures. Well, you can't write textures in line, but obviously because they're image files, but you can reference them. You have your, for stuff like textures and structure files, you have a separate file, and then you as you said, you explicitly include them in in the project, and it compiles to that. Basically, it takes all the things you've explicitly included and puts them into the final project.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that definitely helped as well. And let me just say also what I was going to say before is that the reason which we were using Zoglin is, well, partially because, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tool to help writing data packs, right? So obviously we're going to use it, but since obviously it's also not fully finished. So the real reason we were using it is to is to sort of give it a real-world test, right? Because here's the thing which I find with certain things that people make, right? Like data pack preprocessors. You have this idea, okay, let's imagine you're just starting out with Minecraft data packs, but you're experienced with programming, and you're like, you have this idea for a language which compiles to Minecraft data packs, right? And you're like, oh yeah, I could add this and this and this. But you haven't really done that much Minecraft data packs yet. You just sort of know the concepts of it, and you know the concepts of other programming languages, and you want to make them closer together. The problem that what might happen is that you end up creating the wrong abstraction. And what I mean by that is creating a language, right, which doesn't, you know, which is sort of your concept maybe of how it should be, but it maybe doesn't work that well, because if you haven't had experience with actual writing data packs, there's always certain things which you won't know about, right? So I think one thing that definitely helped us write Zoglin is, you know, having a lot of experience writing data packs, right? You know, we worked on Code of Copper for a year, and so that's a lot of coding which we did, right? A lot of data packs making. So I think that definitely helped us design Zoglin, because we know exactly the problems which we face and what can be improved upon in data packing. And another good way to know whether your thing is good or not, right, is to actually build something with it. So Harlequins is a really good thing, which while we were making it, we realized, oh, you know what would be really useful to do? This thing, right? It'd be really nice if we could do this, because this specific problem, right, made me realize, actually, you know, this
is lacking.
This
right
feature
now.
Is really useful.
Yeah.
So it was good as sort of a real world test of the language, as a concrete project, because I feel like often with certain things, right, certain tools in programming, you have the idea for it and you start working on it, but it's all still an idea, and you don't have necessarily a practical application for it. And if you don't have that, then you might end up building the wrong tool that doesn't do the job in the way that it needs. So I always find that making something specific to a situation you have, make something that fixes a problem that you have in the way you want it to be fixed. And then if it applies to other problems you have, then you can change it and make it better fit to general problems that you have. But don't try and make a tool that solves the problem that you don't have yet.
Yeah.
If that sense. That's sort of a general thing I find in software development. But yeah, so yeah. That is sort of why we were using it and what we were doing. So yeah, I think let's talk about how Zoglin affected our productivity then, I guess.
Yeah.
The one problem with Zoglin, the main problem with Zoglin, so at the moment, we plan to fix in the future, but obviously since it's still a young project, right, it's gonna be a while before it's perfect, obviously. The one problem at the moment is the lack of, I guess, like, editor support, let's say. With something like MC Function, right, or, you know, any programming language, including MC Function, now you've got what's called a language server, which is basically this smart piece of code that someone's written, which helps you a lot in writing code, because it understands the context of your program, and it provides helpful autocomplete and stuff like that for your code, right? And in addition to that, it also catches any errors you might make in your coding. If you accidentally misspell something, or, you know, put two things the wrong way around or whatever, it will tell you before you even run the code. It will say, hey, this isn't going to work because of this. Now, Zoglin doesn't have that yet, because we can't really just use the existing tools for empty function, because it doesn't understand the context of our program, because it doesn't understand Zoglin, it only understands empty function.
Yeah.
Which leads to, you know, sometimes, you know, you're going to make mistakes. Sometimes you're going to make mistakes in your coding, and it won't necessarily catch those, because we don't have any syntax highlighting or stuff like that. So that is something I found. Sometimes I'd be like, why isn't this working? Why isn't this running? And then I realized I'd have a typo in the thing. And I think that's just a general problem with empty function, is there's quite a lack of
good error reporting.
Because basically, if you load your data pack with a syntax error in it, it basically just that function file
just doesn't load.
Just doesn't breaks. Load. But yeah, since no errors show in chat, you have to like check the logs every time, which is sort of annoying. And the error messages themselves are not very helpful at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that is something that generally is just a problem with Minecraft. But yeah, so that was one thing which sort of slowed down productivity as well.
I feel like it would have been a lot worse if we weren't as experienced with data packs, because I feel I ran into it a couple times, but it was usually it would take me 1 or 2 minutes to figure out what the issue was. Whereas for someone beginning, if they don't have it telling them that, it's like gonna be like it could be upwards of like 45 minutes to figure out what exactly done wrong. It is definitely an important area that we need to focus on before we can really release Zoglin as a full release.
Other than lack of and obviously the other slowdown is that it's the lack of speed up from autocomplete, right? Because autocomplete can speed up your workflow significantly, because 100%. You just press tab and the thing you're trying to write is just there, right? Which is super useful. And so, yeah, for sure, we're going to work on that in the future, the Zoglin, but we're not quite there yet. That's obviously something which, yeah. But I think I would say overall, it probably made the workflow easier and smoother.
Yeah, outside of syntax errors, I think it did. I personally found it easier to reason with, and also I found that I was less reluctant to extract into a function. I feel like in MC function, because there's a bit of a mental cost, and also a time based cost of extracting code into a separate function, because you have to create the file and then you have to split your reasoning between two different files. It's hard to
work with.
Yeah. Whereas I found, because it was so cheap to make a new function, and obviously it still at the end of the day makes a new an actual new file in the end product, but that's less important to me. What's more important to me is I can just read the one file and I can see all my code and I can very easily see what it's calling. I don't have to click through to see the code. Like, I don't have to fully change tab in VS Code. I can just, within the same tab, I can just kind of know what it's doing. And that's really a big plus.
You can see both, you know, depending on the context of it and everything, but you can see both sides of the code on your screen at the same time, because they're in the same file, right? And the other thing I found is really nice, which definitely, we've definitely improved it since working on Harlequin, is one thing I find that's kind of annoying about MC function is that you have to type the full path to the function every time you want to call it, right?
Yeah.
And especially with stuff like what we're doing, which is where we like to, you know, have nested folders pretty often.
Mm.
That can lead to some seriously long function names, right? You've got like multiple levels of nesting.
Yeah.
I remember one specific one in Code of Copper, which was like super long. Whereas one nice thing of Zoglin is we basically allowed you to write a relative path. So if you're already 5 modules deep and you're trying to call something in the same module as your current one, you can just call it by its name rather than having to, you know, reference the entire path.
Yeah. Because
that makes sense, right? You don't want to have to reference the entire path if it's mostly the same as your current path.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was one thing I found was good. And obviously, the features for that was pretty lacking at the time. But we've improved that a lot since then, and I think it will. It's going to be good. It's definitely going to, that bit alone is going to speed up productivity.
And I really do feel like that's an innovation of Zoglin. I feel like I haven't really seen other preprocessors doing that. I might be wrong. I haven't obviously looked into all of them, but we did, when we were starting Zoglin, go through a bunch of them. And that's very much a feature because of Zoglin's focus on like modules and like code nesting as like a first class function of the language. I feel that's really, like helping like keeping Zoglin grounded and able to make the same kind of data packs you would be able to in just vanilla MC function.
Yeah, I think one thing, which obviously we'll talk about this more when Zoglin's more complete and when we've actually, you know, when we do a podcast episode on it, but one thing that I like a lot about Zoglin is we're not doing too much abstraction. Like, for the most part, I mean, at least as far as Zoglin is right now, where we are at the moment, where, you know, in the state it's in at the time of writing Harlequins, it's very easy to see, just by looking at Zoglin code, what the resulting MC function is going to be, right? The only slightly, you know, confusing thing might be, like, if files include each other and there's, like, some nesting of stuff, but, you know, you can pretty much see, okay, this command is written here, and this function is in this module, so I know exactly how this is going to translate into MC function. Which I feel like the same thing can't necessarily be said for other preprocessors. And that's fine. I think that's not necessarily a problem. But for me, at least, I find it easy to reason about if you can know exactly how it's going to look. I don't want to talk about this too much because we'll get into that one in the thing. But So I think this might be a good place to finish, honestly.
I reckon.
I think we've pretty much covered the things that I wanted to talk about for this. For this episode, I think. We've covered a lot of things. We've definitely dug deep into the process of creating and developing Harlequins, and I think we're going to end this episode.